This is episode 449 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life so you can love your people, get prepared, and live free. Today's article, Guide to Bugging In. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey everyone, I want to invite you to a free video lesson on three ways to get started in food storage. These free video lessons will help you get your pantry prepared so you always have food in your home. This free lesson includes three downloadable worksheets along with links to other articles and resources if you want to take a deeper dive into food storage. And for my podcast friends, I also have provided an MP3 of the lesson that is downloadable so you can listen to it on the go. To sign up for this free lesson, click the link in the show notes and come on over to Prepper Website. And I know that I haven't mentioned this in a while. I do want to mention that this episode is sponsored by my ebook, The Preparedness Community's Guide to a Microbiz and Increasing Your Finances. If you are trying to find money for preparedness, if you are wanting to pay down debt, if you are wanting to build an emergency fund, then maybe the key and the answer is having a side hustle or a microbiz. Now, I do believe that is the answer because I know that that greatly helped me out in my preparedness. And so I did write a book on that. The book, when you purchase the book, I have it in ebook and also in audio form. When you purchase it, you also get access to the Prepper Website forums, and that's for life. So if you'd like some more information about that, I have a link in the show notes, and or you can come on over to theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. All right, so before we get started, I just want to mention again that the California fires, man, they're just terrible. And so as I'm doing this podcast, and I'm doing it kind of late because I had the on Thursday nights, it's always a later evening for me because I do a devotional for my church. I do a Facebook Live. And so if you follow me on Facebook, my personal page, I pretty much only share out spiritual things there. But I also share out when I do the devotional. And so if you're interested in that, you could catch it there. But then tonight or this Thursday night, for those of you who don't understand or know that I do the Friday podcast or the podcast I do it the night before, right? So this was also the evening that we did the Facebook Live interview with James Leary of PlanAndPrepared.com. And so that went really well. Really glad to do that. And James is a good guy. And we read his articles on the podcast and link to them on Prepper Website. And so hopefully I can share that that interview with you here on the podcast here in the future. But just wanted to bring up that, you know, the California Inferno, as I'm reading this late in the evening, coming off a Drudge Report, the death toll is up to 63, and there's 600 people missing. And man, that is terrible, you know, for all that. Of course, people evacuated, and the fire was moving so fast, people evacuated, and they probably didn't have their phones or chargers or whatever. And then so, you know, they could be in, you know, refugee centers and not have access to be able to call other people. So that's, you know, one reason, again, to have a bug out bag that you can take, you know, spare the moment. But it's just a terrible thing to consider. I mean, all these people, you know, possibly could have lost their lives. You know, one of the other things that's happened here, mentioning the refugee centers, on the Facebook group, I shared out a video, or no, I'm sorry, not a video, an article that in some of these refugee centers that a norovirus is already spreading, right? And so that happened really fast. I mean, the fire just happened this last week. And so people that are there, you know, are passing around the norovirus. Now, a lot of the times the norovirus, I mean, you've got diarrhea, you got cramps and fever and that kind of stuff. And it can be very, very serious. But a lot of the times, it's, you know, definitely if you're watching it and you got fluids and you try to be relatively clean, you can be okay with it. But the fact is that spread very quickly throughout that refugee center. Now imagine if it was a true poop hit the fan situation and you were in a refugee center and that was going on. I mean, they wouldn't have all the medical supplies and everything that you would need. And that would be, you know, again, one of the reasons why you wouldn't want to go to a refugee center. So that's why you're prepared, so you don't have to do those types of things. So you have options, so that you have plans. And so, again, this is one of those real life things. If you are trying to find a reason to help maybe a family member understand why it would be a good idea to have some preparedness, even if it is some basic preparedness, you know, like we're not talking about end of the world, zombie, you know, EMP type stuff, but just some basic things in place. You can bring up something like the California fire and how fast it happened. And that would be a great reason why you would have to, you would want to have a bug out bag and some supplies, you know, that you can grab at a moment's notice that would help you so that you are not in a situation like this. A little bit of planning could cause, you know, could really go far where you would know where you're going. So you're just not following the crowd, you know, to a refugee center. You're like, hey, no, I know that I'm going to go stay with this person, or I'm going to go hang out over here. So I have an idea of what I need to do. So this would be one of those things as you're talking with family and friends about preparedness. This would be one of those things that you could grab and use as a real life scenario of why preparedness is a good thing to do, why it's something that people should add to their lives. So keep these people, keep California and all the people in your prayers. A lot of just destruction going into the holidays and stuff like that. Just lives are completely changed. And I know that, you know, in some places I've seen on Facebook, well, it's California, you know, they've done it to themselves and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, families' lives are completely changed. There's a lot of innocent people that were involved here that might have lost everything that they had. And maybe they believe just like you, but they happen to live in California and they lost their homes. I know one of our sister churches, they talked about that it was completely burned down. And so there's people there that are going to have a lot of heartache, a lot of loss. And that's just, you know, that's terrible. You know, some people lost everything. When your house completely burns down and you're moving so fast that you can't even take pictures and stuff like that, you just like, you got to hurry up and get out. You know, that's terrible. And so keep these people in your prayers if you can. And I know that we're going to still be hearing about this for a long time. There's a lot of things going on with this. All right, so let's go ahead and move into our first article. And I'll just say that as we get to the end of this article, I just want to, if you'll hang out with me, because I know sometimes it's easy to just after the article to kind of tune out. But if you'll hang out, I just got some stuff I want to talk to you about for next week, all right? So this article comes to us from thesimpleprepper.com, and the title is Guide to Bugging In. Now, we talked about bugging out, and we've talked about, you know, having a bug out location, and we've talked about all those types of things. Let's talk a little bit about bugging in. I don't 100% agree with everything in this article. I'll point out some things that I think maybe you should think about maybe. But there's some things here that's kind of like you really got to maybe think about the perspective where they're coming from. I guess that's a better way of saying it. Instead of saying I don't agree with everything, it's just kind of looking at it from a different perspective. And so let's go ahead and get started. All right. Ultimate guide to bugging in. Although modern emergency infrastructure can handle most small emergencies, the system can quickly break down when faced with large-scale natural disasters and human-induced catastrophic events. The result can be a loss of most basic services that our daily lives rely on: running water, access to food at the store, emergency medical and fire services, and communication networks. When you are left without these elements that hold our society together, having a plan in place for protecting yourself and your family can be the difference between surviving through the catastrophe or not. Now, one of the most important things you will need to decide ahead of and or at the outset of any disaster is whether you will bug in versus bug out, shelter in place, or evacuate. While there are times when bugging out is necessary and potentially advantageous, bugging in is the preferred choice in most cases. Critically, bugging in requires a significant amount of preparation work in order to ensure you will have everything you need to survive when the time comes. This is where a bugging in checklist can come in handy. Knowing what you need to prepare for and how you will organize your shelter can go a long way towards helping you and your family move efficiently and safely when the time comes. Now, this guide will help you prepare that checklist by covering everything you need to consider in your bugging in plan, from choosing, organizing, and securing a shelter hub, to ensuring access to food and water, to preparing backup plans when bugging out becomes a necessary choice. This guide will help prepare you and your family to bug in during a major emergency. Now, five reasons why preppers should bug in first. Within the prepping community, a huge amount of attention and resources are geared towards bugging out. However, bugging out should only be the survival mode of choice when bugging in is untenable. The reason is that there are numerous advantages to bugging in. Number one is a built-in shelter. One of the major advantages to bugging in during an emergency is that you already have one of the essential survival components built into your plan, the shelter. Compared to sleeping outside, even in a tent, your home is dry, insulated, and relatively spacious. Your home can also be much more secure than sleeping outside, since the doors and windows can be locked and even boarded against potential intruders. Plus, in the worst case scenario of someone entering your home, you and your family will be familiar with escape routes and hiding places to help you stay safe. Number two is the neighborhood community. Another advantage to sticking around your home is that you have a built-in community. Chances are high that you will recognize your neighbors, which allows you to begin discriminating between people who you expect outside your home and potential intruders. In addition, if you have neighbors who are also bugging in, you can band together to share information and resources and even develop a rotating neighborhood watch to provide collective security. Number three is local knowledge. Knowing your local surroundings, your town, and region can also be an important advantage in the event that you need to venture outside your home. Scavenging for food, water, gasoline, or other supplies will be much simpler if you have an idea of where stores and potentially abandoned homes are located. Plus, in the event that you do need to bug out after days or weeks of sheltering in place, you will have an idea of what roads lead where lesser-known trails are located, and what the topography of the region is like. Then there's supplies. When bugging out, you are limited to the supplies you can carry on your back. In contrast, bugging in allows you to stockpile essentially limitless amounts of food and water, which you'll also use less of since you will not need to expend energy moving around with heavy packs. Additionally, your home is likely to be filled with potentially useful tools and supplies that you would never be able to include in a bug-out bag. Having access to a diversity of household items opens up possibilities for improvising solutions as problems arise. And then number five is being found. Although it might not be a priority at the outset of an emergency, being found by friends, families, and emergency responders can be critical as a disaster winds down. Typically, your home is the first place that people will go looking for you to reconnect or to provide emergency aid. All right, so all of those are really great reasons for why you want to bug in. So here are eight steps to prepare to bug in. So let's go ahead and start reading this part. Preparations for bugging in needs to begin long before an emergency. Your family should have a plan, discussed ahead of time, that describes where everyone will meet and what they will bring with them. In addition, your bug-in hub should be pre-stocked with non-perishable food and at least several days' worth of water, as well as basic emergency supplies like a portable radio, medical kit, and a flashlight. As soon as you receive warning of an emergency, it is time to put your bug-in plan into action. Check first for official emergency communications over your radio, or if they are still functioning, your television or phone. If there is an evacuation notice for your area and you are still able to leave, follow it. This is a situation when bugging in has been determined by authorities to be more dangerous than bugging out. Otherwise, as long as there is still electricity and running water, begin charging all battery-powered electronics, fill your bathtubs with water. These work best, so there's a link there, and gather your family in your bug-in hub. All right, so this is the part that I really don't really 100% agree with, right? The idea is to have like a bug-in hub, and I guess that is going to be like the main area where your family is going to be sleeping and eating and all those types of things. But at the same time, there's mention here that if power and running water are still going and stuff like that, that is a reason why you would want to, you still want to depend on those types of things. So I do agree that if you are, of course, if you have running water, you have electricity, you want to use that to your full advantage. If you really believe that the poop has hit the fan, if you do have like battery chargers, you have tools that you use that are battery charged, you do want to charge everything up, everything that's possible, you want to charge that up. If you have clothes, you want to wash your clothes. If you still have electricity, all that kind of stuff, right? You want to do that. I don't necessarily agree with having like one central location, a hub, if all those things are still in place. If electricity is still on, if you've got power all over the house, water is still going, I don't necessarily agree with that. I do agree with that, like for sleeping, maybe for protection, where everyone comes into one place, in one room, especially if you're living in the winter months and you're not able to heat your home. That, you know, allows people to come in and you're conserving body heat there in that situation. So I do agree with that. And it's easier to keep one place warm, or maybe even if it's a hotter, summer or whatever, it's easier to maybe have a fan going in just one area if you are maybe running on batteries and different things like that. So, but necessarily bringing everything into one place, I don't 100% agree with that. So it kind of depends on where you're at. This article is written more along the lines as, you know, like a big situation has happened. I kind of imagine it like a big pandemic has hit or whatever, a big thing is going down and then things are slowly happening. And so you are deciding to bug in. And so it's getting really bad out there. And so I think that's kind of the way that this idea was, or this article was written with that idea in mind. But I can just tell you that for me, if the power is still on, electricity, the water is still running, all those types of things are going on, we're not going to be hovering in one room. You know, we're still going to be spread out. We still need our space. If it's one of those situations where things are getting chaotic or whatever for safety reasons, for warmth, to run a fan, then maybe we would be coming into one room. All right. So with me saying all that, let me go ahead and start reading these. Number one is choosing and organizing your shelter. One of the most basic elements to your bug-in checklist should be where in your home you will be bugging in. Keeping your entire house running in an emergency is not only an inefficient use of limited resources, but also reduces your security. Choosing a single room or a set of connected rooms that will serve as your hub throughout the disaster period, this hub will be where your efforts to maintain heating, light, and sanitation will be focused. Your bug-in hub should be an above-ground room on an upper floor if your area is prone to flooding, that can be fully enclosed by doors and has few or no windows. The room should be large enough to comfortably fit your entire family, along with sleeping bags and daily food and water supplies. The room that you choose should also be able to accommodate a non-electric heater. While a living room with a fireplace can be a good choice for some emergencies, any disaster involving airborne chemicals or radiological debris will require a room that can be more easily sealed off from the outside world. If your hub room has a closet, this is an ideal space to store food and water, as well as any other emergency supplies you will need with you while bugging in. Otherwise, keep 1 to 2 days worth of food and water in your hub room at a time and use an adjoining room for your larger stockpile of emergency supplies. Ideally, these supplies should be stockpiled and kept in the hub room well ahead of a disaster, and your family should know to use them only in case of an emergency. So the other thing that I can think of why you would want to do, like have a hub room, maybe it's more of a stockpile, a place where you're keeping everything stockpiled and organized, and that might be a good thing. But again, for me, if everything is still in place, all the utilities, that's not necessarily going to be the way that I'm going to do things. All right, number two is ensuring access to water. Water is one of the most difficult parts of any survival plan since it is heavy and bulky, while at the same time going without it for as little as 3 days will be fatal. the availability of water sources will depend in large part on the nature of the emergency happening outside. So the most versatile plan for ensuring access to water is simply to stockpile it in your house ahead of time. A good rule of thumb is to store 1 gallon of water per person per day, which can be used for both drinking and sanitation. Now, although you can purchase bottled water ahead of an emergency, purchasing tens of gallons of water can quickly become expensive. Instead, simply fill specifically designed water storage containers, what I use at my home, here's the link, and develop a plan to rotate the water about every 6 months, as recommended by FEMA. Another option for storing large volumes of water is to install a rain barrel. Although this approach takes more time up front, collecting rainwater is one of the best ways to keep regenerating your water supplies while you're bugging in. Note that rainwater will need to be chemically treated or filtered before drinking it, so you will need to keep water purification supplies in your emergency kit. All right, so water, definitely very important. You do need to come up with a way for water storage, and it is one of those, the more difficult ones, because you know, it's the space that you need to store it. You need to be able to store a lot of it. So you need to come up with some good ideas on how to do that. Our number three is planning for emergency food supplies. While your family can go longer without food than without water, planning for how you will feed multiple people while sheltering through a disaster is an important part of your bugging in plan. Since you are not likely to have access to your normal kitchen appliances, keep your food plan simple and rely primarily on non-perishable ingredients that store well for long periods. Now, freeze-dried food, more info and good options, and there's links there, and backpack meals are all excellent food choices if you have access to hot water. This is a major reason to keep a backpacking stove and plenty of stove fuel with your emergency supplies. Coffee, tea, and hot chocolate can provide a welcome morale boost and help keep your body warm when it gets cold in your shelter hub. When possible, start out by eating whatever perishable foods you were keeping in your refrigerator, freezer, and pantry. This will help lengthen the overall time your food supplies will last, as well as put food that will otherwise spoil to good use. All right, so if you go through my food lesson, my food storage lesson, you're going to get a lot of ideas on where to start with your food storage, and before going with freeze-dried and dehydrated and MREs and things like that. So, you know, it's always good to have diversity. There are a lot of other options as far as starting and doing it more economically and being able to have a lot more in place so that if you need it, you have it ready to go. All right, so number four is keeping your shelter warm and lit. Without electricity, whichever room your family is sheltering in will be without heat and without overhead lights. However, coming prepared with a non-electric heater and portable lights can make your hub significantly more comfortable and save you from burning through excess calories to keep yourself warm. If the room you are sheltering in has a fireplace and you have wood to burn, using an open fire to heat your shelter is a viable option. However, purchasing a propane or kerosene burning heater offers much more versatility and heating efficiency, but make sure there is a way to vent the heater appropriately. Both propane and kerosene are easily obtained ahead of a disaster and store for years without going stale. As a rule of thumb, plan on storing enough fuel to run your heater for at least 30 hours. The best way to determine how much fuel this requires is to run the heater ahead of time, which also allows you to ensure that it is powerful enough to heat the entire room. And once you have a heat source, the next step in keeping your shelter warm will be to insulate it. First, seal off your bug-in room as much as possible and minimize the number of times that people are entering and exiting the room. Use blankets and towels to seal cracks underneath doors and drape them over windows, in addition to closing the blinds to add insulation. In order to reduce heat loss from your own body, it is essential to wear multiple layers of clothing when possible. You should wear as much clothing as it takes to feel warm. Common areas of heat loss from the body are at the feet, neck, and head, so be sure to include socks, a scarf, and a thick hat in your outfit. Also, make sure that everyone in your family has heavy blankets or a warm sleeping bag at night. knowing where all of these items are in your house before a disaster strikes, or simply storing them in your designated shelter room is a critical part of your emergency preparedness plan. Now, having a portable lighting solution for your shelter room will also make your entire experience easier and more comfortable, as well as reduce the chances of getting injured from stumbling around in the dark. Each person in your family should have a flashlight or a headlamp, while you can keep a bright camping lantern in your emergency supplies to provide a central light for your room. While candles can add both light and warmth to your shelter room, note that they also pose a potential fire hazard. Again, so this was written with the idea of winter, and definitely that's going to be one of those things. And when it comes to keeping warm, if utilities are out, all these things need to be put in place. You need to make sure that you have, you know, some warm clothes, not only warm clothes, but if you have thermals or, you know, anything like that, that base layer, that's going to be very, very important. And then building upon that when you're sleeping, you know, so I can just imagine what that would be up north when it falls, when it's really, really cold. You would want everybody in one place and trying to stay as warm as possible. That's one reason why you don't ever want to like get rid of blankets and things like that. Even if they're older and you're not going to use them, you know, get one of those space saving, bags and put them, you know, wash them, put them in there and then, you know, seal them up so that you have them if you need them. You know, you don't ever want to get rid of those. Also, after winter, I know that my wife got these really, really warm blankets at Sam's for like really cheap, like 10, 15 bucks. At the end of winter time, and they serve us really, really well. And so you want to look for things like that so that you can, you know, you can stock up on, because if you ever had a situation where your power goes out and it is freezing, man, your heater goes out or whatever, you definitely want to have the supplies to stay warm. Now for me, winter time is definitely one of those things, but for me, living where I live down south in Houston, I would be more concerned with the heat. The heat, I mean, you know, you're in a home and it gets hot and you're going to want to open up the windows. And if you're concerned about, you know, intruders and stuff like that, then you're going to want to close the windows. And then your house is like super hot and, you know, people can die. I mean, people who are, you know, up in age can die because it's so hot. I mean, yeah, I've talked about that before in the podcast, where during Hurricane Ike and Rita, and when people evacuated Houston, people died on the side of the road because their cars ran out of gas. They were stuck in traffic, you know, trying to evacuate, and you know, there was no medical help there, and they were elderly and they died. And a lot of the times the people didn't even realize it right away, and they kind of looked like maybe they were going to sleep and taking a nap or whatever, but they wound up dying. And so you definitely want to have options in place to keep cool. So again, running fans on USB, that have USB connections where you can connect them to big battery banks, having some deep cell batteries connected and with solar panels and things like that, where you can run fans. And that would be very important if you have somebody who is elderly, but maybe just to keep cool, because you don't want to be miserable, right? And so you want to have some really thin sheets. If that was the case, you want to be able to stay as cool as possible and have other things. So it kind of goes both ways on that one. All right, so enough with that. Let's move on. Number five is dealing with sanitation. All right, so sanitation is not usually at the top of the list of concerns in a wide-ranging disaster, but when the septic system stops working, it can suddenly be a serious issue. Unfortunately, without running water or power to the pumps that keep septic systems flowing, disposing of human waste from your house can be much more difficult than simply flushing the toilet. The solution is relatively simple if your house has an individual septic system with its own septic tank in your yard. In this case, you can simply use water, ideally water from your bathtubs that you filled before the water stopped running, to manually refill your toilet's tank, then flush as normal. This solution also works if you are certain your town's municipal septic line is operating, although there is no way to tell without potentially allowing sewage to backflow into your home if the main septic line is not being pumped. So that's the thing, man. So if you have a septic tank, eventually you do need to service that, but you have a long time to go. you know, if you have a sewer lines and you're running, you know, on sewer lines, I mean, that's a whole different story. And I've talked about that a little bit before. One thing that, you know, we recently talked about this on the podcast is you would want to add the water directly to the bowl instead of to the water tank, right? Because instinctively people will flush, and you might not want to flush if someone just, you know, just peed in the toilet. Again, the saying is it, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. And so, you know, you might want to just leave it there. But people who just are used to flushing would waste precious resource of that water. So it might be better just to have a 5-gallon bucket there with water, and then you're able to just flush down when you need to. Just pour it directly into the bowl. All right. So continuing on with this one. If it is possible to go outside, then digging a latrine is also an option. For individual use, you will want to dig a hole that is at least 6 inches deep. Although if multiple people will be using this hole for days on end, you will want to go much deeper than that. Be sure to dig your hole at least 200 feet from any water sources. Unfortunately, going outside won't be possible in most emergency situations, so you need to deal with waste inside your home when flushing isn't an option. Remove as much water as you can from the toilet, then line it with two black garbage bags, one inside the other in case of a rip, and use the toilet seat to keep the bags open. After using the toilet, add cat litter to the bag to reduce the odor. When the bag is about 2/3 filled, add a small amount of bleach if you have it, closing the bag securely, and then place it into a garbage can or into your garage to deal with after the emergency is over. So again, that is if, and again, there's just so much here. I know that I've talked about it in the past, so I'm not going to rehash all of that. The idea is here, if the situation does get better, that would be great. If it doesn't, well, then you're in a whole different situation. You're gonna have to have a different sanitation plan. All right. So number six is securing your shelter. In a prolonged disaster situation, security against looters and desperate people is a real concern. While it is not necessary to go overboard with security, it is important to stay vigilant and take precautions to not attract attention to your home. It is typically good practice to keep lights off at night and to ensure the windows are blacked out when moving around with flashlights so as not to attract attention from people passing by at night. In addition, if you have neighbors who also sheltered in place, talk to them about whether they have seen unexpected people in your neighborhood and consider working together to establish a night watch for the neighborhood. While you do not want to damage your home, consider ways to give your home the appearance of having been ransacked already can also dissuade potential intruders from thinking there are things worth stealing inside. A messy appearance during a disaster will blend in more than a nicely maintained exterior. Number seven is raising morale and fitness. The importance of keeping morale up while weathering a disaster cannot be understated, since your outlook drastically affects your ingenuity when solving problems and your ability to think clearly as the situation evolves. Adding foods that are a treat for you and your family, as well as a deck of cards or a board game, into your emergency stores can go a long way towards keeping spirits up. In addition, keeping busy with specific goals like finding additional food and water or bulking up your shelter security can give everyone a sense of purpose. Staying fit is also an important consideration, especially if you will be limited to staying within your shelter room for days on end. Maintaining fitness not only increases morale, but can also be important to your survival if you need to bug out or defend your shelter. There are a wide range of cardiovascular and muscle building exercises that can be done without any specialized equipment and using only your body weight that will help you stay in good shape. And then number eight is having a backup bug out plan. Even after you have committed to bugging in, and even if you have plenty of supplies to last your family for weeks to come, it is important to remain prepared to bug out in case the situation outside your shelter changes. Check out this guide to bugging out here. If an intruder gets into your home or the disaster escalates to a point where sheltering in place is no longer safe, you will need to be able to take a limited set of supplies and escape quickly. This backup bug out plan may or may not be the same as your original bug out plan, since it is likely that your car will no longer start or the roads are impassable. having a portable radio or another method of receiving communication from the outside world can go a long way towards making the decision to bug out or remain in place and help inform your plan in case bugging out is required. So when a disaster strikes, bugging in is often a safer and more comfortable option for you and your family than bugging out. Although your home may lose most of its modern amenities without electricity, running water, or heat, simply having a shelter pre-stocked with emergency supplies can make a huge difference in weathering a catastrophe. However, bugging in requires careful planning ahead of time to ensure that you have the supplies you need where you need them. Hopefully, our guide gets things started for you and your family to prepare for bugging in. All right. So guys, that is it for the article. Good information here, and like always, part of preparedness, the most significant part is planning and thinking things through. You know, what do you need? What is it going to look like? If it looks like this, what am I going to do? If it looks like this, what am I going to do? Working through those plans, having those plans in place, it's very important, and even actually having them written down somewhere. And that's why I created, you know, the My Prep Journal, right? I created that so that you can write those preparedness plans down. So if you are in a poop hit the fan situation and you're kind of frozen, or maybe you're not able to process and think things through, and maybe you feel overwhelmed, if you have your plans written down, then you're able to start to implement them, right? And so it's like, all right, well, here's my plan. I need to do first, second, third, fourth. I need to start going down the list and doing these things. Then, I mean, you're able to get prepared, and you're able to be way ahead of the game compared to other people that are shell-shocked and not even prepared. And so definitely planning is a very important aspect to this. And so what would it look like? So that's the challenge, right? Going into the weekend, what would it look like for you and your family to bug in? And then think about the different scenarios. What would it look like if you bugged in and everything was still in, all the utilities were still in place, right? And what would it look like for your family if you bugged in and then all the utilities were off? I know sometimes people will go through maybe a weekend. They'll make a game out of it. Hey, how would we do things? And maybe they turn off all the electricity except for just like the refrigerator and the freezer to keep those things cold. But to run the family through, hey, what would we do if we didn't have water, if we didn't have electricity? How would we handle things? And then kind of running through that exercise there. Your kids might not like you, but at least you would be able to see some points of failure and what things needed to be taken care of. So like always, guys, I'm going to link to this in the show notes, this article, Guide to Bugging In from thesimpleprepper.com. I'm going to link to that in the show notes so that you can click on over there. There's a couple of links in here that you might want to go check out to see what he exactly was talking about as far as different products and links to Amazon that he was mentioning or referring to. All right, so earlier this week, I read an article on whiteouts, driving in whiteout conditions. And so we had Eric left a comment the other day, and so I read it on yesterday's podcast. And so Jay Faust left another one on this particular one. And so again, guys, remember, I don't have a lot of experience in this at all, so I'm relying on those of you that do live up north and drive in whiteout conditions. It's kind of funny saying that. Whiteout conditions, for your advice on this. And so Jay Faust says this: turn your headlights off. Your parking lights, all the red and amber ones, will keep you visible and be more than adequate to see down the road. That's why fog lights are amber, not white. Especially if you drive like you've got some sense, slow down. All right, so again, good advice there. If your headlights, I guess, are reflecting off of the snow and blinding you, then using all the other lights, your running lights, your parking lights, everything else, would be very helpful. If you have fog lights, you know, that you're able to run, anything else would like that would be helpful. And then just use common sense. Guys, most preparedness is common sense. And when I was talking with James and doing the interview on home security on the Facebook Live interview, I mean, a lot of home security is common sense. The problem is that we get lazy, we get lax, and we don't start implementing some of the things that really should be done. And, you know, one of the things we mentioned on that interview is sometimes we can do things that might take us 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds to do, but it would save us ton of time and ton of, discomfort if we do that, right? And so, I'll save that for the interview, but sometimes it's just something that we do a little bit. It takes a little bit of time that gives us a big return. But if we don't do it and we have to deal with it, man, the consequences suck on that. And so something as simple as, learning how to drive carefully, using common sense, whether you're in whiteout conditions or whether you are in pouring down rain conditions, like I talked about, a couple of days ago, it just being smart about it and using common sense. The problem is common sense isn't common anymore, right? As the saying goes. All right, so Jay Faust, thanks so much for leaving that comment, guys. If you ever leave a comment in any of the episodes, I will be sure, and if it's information that you're providing, I will be happy to share that with the podcast community, in a future podcast. So feel free to come on over and leave whatever information or advice that you have, and if I think it's valuable and it's constructive, I definitely would want to share that. All right, so let me talk very briefly about next week. Next week is Thanksgiving, of course, and I'm going to take a break from the podcast. Usually holiday weeks in weekends and stuff like that, the big holidays, it's very, very low listenership. But at the same time, you're with family and friends and all those types of things, and you're having that good time. And so, you don't want to spend that completely listening to my voice all the time. And so for me, it's going to be a much needed break where I can just kind of rest and relax. I'm going to be with family. And I've got some other projects actually that I'm going to be working on. And that way I can kind of devote a lot of my attention to that. And at the same time, spending time with family and getting things done around the house that I really need to get done that I've kind of been neglecting. And so I'm looking forward to being off. Now, I'm still going to be, Prepper website is still going to be updated. I'm still going to see you on social media and different things like that. I'll still be around, but I'm just not going to do the podcast. So I'm going to take a week off for the podcast. Now, I say that and then I'm like, oh, coming back with this. More than likely, I will release. I know I have at least one podcast that I will release, but it doesn't mean that I will be in front of the microphone recording it. So I did an interview, a video interview for Survival Sullivan. We read a lot of Survival Sullivan's articles on the podcast. And he just asked me a bunch of questions, sent me questions in written form. And, it was going to be like an article, right? And so I was going to type all these out, but I figured, it'd be easier for me to be able to, because of time and all the things, it'd be easier for me to do a video. And so he agreed to it. Dan agreed to it. So I did a video kind of answering all my, all these questions. And it was a pretty decent length. And, I went into some detail on some of these answers. So I got permission to rip the audio off of that video, and then I'm going to provide that as a podcast. So there will be one, at least one, maybe two podcasts for next week, but they won't require me to get in front of the microphone and record and do a lot of that. So I just want to leave that out there as we're closing down for the week. Before I do that, I guess I want to say I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. For those of you that are in the United States, hope you have a great time with family and friends. Those of you that are listening that are not in the United States, I hope you have a great week and you have a restful weekend. And as we continue on pushing through and, you know, doing the things that we do, you know, doing this preparedness thing and making sure that we keep our family safe, that we do what we can do. We take responsibility and we keep our family safe. That's the important thing to do. So I want to just say I'm grateful for all of you, thankful for your listenership and all the support that you give me, that you've been giving me this this last year, right? And so actually, I guess we're coming up on 2 years. In February, it's going to be 2 years. Wow, time is just moving really fast. So with that, guys, I'm going to go ahead and shut down this podcast episode here. Hey, don't forget, if you're looking for more preparedness information, we have a Prepper website where we link to articles 24/7, and there is great information there all the time. And so I welcome you to come on over to that. Don't forget to sign up for the free video lesson. You can download the audio there. Be looking for some releases for next week, you know, some fun things, hopefully. I don't know. I'm just kind of putting that out there. And definitely we will catch you on the week after. So that is it for episode 448. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to the show. You can head on over to theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. That way you never miss another episode of Sweet Prepper Goodness. And take a moment to connect with me. I have a ton of ways to connect in the show notes. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until next week, stay prepped and aware. Peace.